From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk some more about rhetoric and some of the devices we use to win people to our side, or just make them laugh a little bit. Sometimes both. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petrus and Ross Petrus. Ross Petrus, you are at your home in Toronto. We had our solar storms a few weeks ago. Ross, did you make it through those okay?
Fletcher, I'm really annoyed. You know, this is a weird thing. Like someone in Seattle put up like clear day, clear day, clear day. Then the one time you want to see something, it's cloudy. That's what all of our friends all over Ontario saw, like these wonderful effects of the aurora. We had like this classic thing. It was sunny and bright, clear skies the night before, clear skies the next day. Suddenly the aurora day comes and it got cloudy at 11 o'clock just when it was supposed to come out. Didn't see a thing. I was really upset. I've never seen an aurora. I've always wanted to see an aurora from a solar storm. Yeah. This is one of the largest solar storms in history. And Toronto really blew it, in my opinion.
So, you blew it, Toronto. You blew it. Yes. I won't make a Maple Leafs joke right there. Hey there, Kathy. How's it going there in Armia? Any auroras to see?
Aurorai
to see?
Well, we didn't go up. We were going to see if we could see anything on the Tadatsa. It wasn't supposed to be great here, but it's coming better soon here. Some aurora event.
Oh.
I don't know. Randy, my husband showed me a map, and I went, oh! I don't know when or where, but soon. And I'm happy about it, okay?
Today, we are returning to rhetoric. I guess returning spelled R-H-E for some reason.
Oh, very good. Returning, right. Yes.
Why not? A little while back, we talked about different rhetorical devices that we sometimes use more often than we think we do, or that are at least a little more common than we realize. And so we're going to take a look at some more of those today.
And you might say these are sort of highfalutin rhetorical terms, which got us into an interesting thing. Kathy mentioned highfalutin. And Kathy, why don't you talk about your reaction to highfalutin, the word?
Okay. I was saying to Ross, and it's one of those like horrible admissions, and I was not a kid. I would have been in my later 20s, I guess. I thought it was highfalutin, like F-A-U-L, not highfalutin. Oh. And I was working as a PR writer for Ad Age magazine, and another person on the staff, I was talking to them, and I said something about highfalutin, and I had written it in a note to her. And she said, I always thought I was highfalutin, and I had that like horrible moment, and I thought, brass it out, baby. So I said, oh, yeah, it's that too, but highfalutin is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I wrote PR. I was good at this.
That's right.
And shortly thereafter, a bunch of accounts left Ad Age because Kathy's great.
Anyway, but so I was saying to Rose, I said, well, high-faulting makes a lot more sense to me. It's like, you know, you're sort of doing, I don't know, it's like you're living high on the hog and faulting, I don't know. Falutin. I couldn't figure out.
That makes more sense to you? Really?
Falutin.
Well, I don't know what falutin is either.
It's like, what is faluting? We were talking about fossil words last time. It's like, what is this? Where did it come from? So since I got it wrong, I want Ross to explain it.
Well, we couldn't really find too much. Apparently, it's also, there's like either like a apostrophe at the end or not, but it is falutin. And it's U.S. American slang, probably from the 1830s to early 40s or late 40s. And it possibly comes from high flying or high flown. Some people say it may come from fluting. I mean, it means pompous and pretentious. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't find much more than that. It's just a slang word that has entered the language. And
yeah.
Some people are trying to change it into high faulting. But
and I think they should. I'm going for that. I'm pushing that one. Yeah, it's funny. Again, like though they're saying only the 1800s. There's all these like things that I mean, that one actually, unlike the ones last week, the skedaddle, and what was the other one? Shebang from the Civil War. Highfalutin sounds like 1800s. It doesn't sound like it's
in the
20s.
I agree. It also sounds American to me,
too. Oh, yeah, for sure. Kathy, do you think that you thought it was Highfalutin just because you'd seen it written and for some reason the letters transposed for you?
Yeah, I think so, because falutin, I think so. I think that it was a word that I had seen in like books.
Yeah.
You know, I used to love historical novels as a kid, and I assumed that like I just flipped it, you know, in my head. I transposed the U and the L.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it right now, and I'd only ever heard it spoken and then was really surprised about how it was spelled when I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I think I'd heard highfalutin, but I didn't think that was the same as highfalutin, which I'd read. I still hold that my way's better, too. I really do. I'm going to take this up with the powers that be.
Anyway, we're back to the rhetoric strikes back. And Fletcher, you're going to find the rhetorical device, okay? Are you ready?
I don't know.
Okay. Well, this is a good one to think about now. Vince Lombardi, the great American football coach, once told his team, if you aren't fired with enthusiasm, you will be fired with enthusiasm.
Cute.
Kath, why don't you read a couple more, though? Let's go to Fletcher.
Ben Franklin, from Vince Lombardi to Ben, we must indeed all hang together. Or assuredly, we shall all hang separately.
And Ben, again, your argument is sound. All sound.
He sounds like a little snide.
I like Ben.
I don't know, Ben.
I like Ben. He had zip.
Yeah, he did. He did have zip, and he had those great glasses, and I'm looking for sunglasses like those. And William Shakespeare, as always, in Henry V, to England will I steal, and there I'll steal.
So what is our rhetorical advice device here?
Right, I have no idea what the name is, because it's going to be some ridiculous Greek name or something.
Of course.
Of course.
Like anti-Greek here. Anti-Greek, Kathy.
Not at all. Not at all. So we're using one word in two different ways in the same sentence or phrase, sort of to play off each other. Mm-hmm. I really love this. I think I use this from time to time, and I always feel really pleased with myself when I do.
Mm-hmm. I love it. And of course, Fletcher, you do know it's Antonoclasis, of course.
Oh, yes.
The ancient
naturally.
Greek term.
Antonoclasis?
Antonoclasis.
Antonoclasis.
Yes. Antonoclasis. And I think it's absolutely, I agree with Fletcher completely, it's absolutely unnecessary to know the term. But we should know the idea behind it. It's emphasizing two different meanings of a repeated word or a phrase to make a kind of ironic sort of joke.
I got to say, can I do my favorite, which is also a garden path sentence, which we talked about.
Oh, I love this one. I know what you're going to do. We both have talked about it. Yeah.
Quickly, what's a garden path sentence?
Oh, garden path sentence is when the first half of the sentence makes you read the second half of the sentence wrong. It leads you down the garden path.
Right. Okay.
This is also, though, Antonoclasis. Uh-huh. Okay, ready?
Yes.
Okay. Time flies like an arrow. Fruit flies like a banana.
I love that one. That is my favorite of all.
I remember, though, the first time I ever saw that, I was a kid, I guess, and I was like, I don't get it. Why is that funny? You throw the banana? What? Took me a while. I was slow, okay? I was tired as a young child.
Okay, Fletcher, we're going to do another one. This is from Monty Python.
Mm.
Waitress. Shut up, shut up, shut up, bloody Vikings. You can't have egg, bacon, spam, and sausages without the spam, Mrs. Bun. But I don't like spam. Mr. Bun, shh, dear. Don't cause a fuss. I'll have your spam. I love it. I'm having spam. Spam, 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 spam. Baked beans. Spam, 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 and spam. Okay, this comes from the spam sketch, believe it or not, of Monty Python.
I don't have any idea, other than repeating the same word over and over, what the rhetorical device is. I will say, what it does, though, is something that is a wonderful secret to comedy, which is that you tell a joke, and then you tell a joke way too many times, And then you tell the joke way too many more times and it gets funny again.
It's true. It's isn't that wonderful? It's and that's actually, I mean, here we go again. I mean, it's ancient Greek. It's it is exactly what you said. It's something, well, you didn't say this part of it. It's epizeuxis.
What?
We use this all the time in our normal conversations, Fletcher.
Wow, epizeuxis. This is a really cool, E-P-I-Z-E-U-X-I-S. That is very cool.
Isn't it? And it's exactly what you said. It's repeating a word over and over. You're by repeating the word, you're giving it emphasis or emotion. And it comes from Ross. Can you pronounce this? Because I cannot.
Oh, sure. It comes from the epi in Greek means upon, and then it links to zeugnoumi. I'm saying it in zeugnoumi and zeugnoumē. I always get modern and ancient Greek mixed up, but in pronunciation,
it happens which is to me yoke. Too, Ross. It's okay.
It happens to all of us.
But it's to yoke. It's on the yoke. You're yoking it up.
Huh.
I mean, not yoking as a joke. You're yoking it as an animal.
You're yucking it up.
Yes.
There you go.
This is one that there's no question. I think we all do. I mean, we found so many. I mean, Casablanca, one of my personal favorite films. I'm shocked to find the gambling is going on in here.
I know. I mean, that's just classic. Yeah.
And it really works because of that repeated shocked, right? If he had just said, I'm shocked to find out, it would have been fine, but it's not nearly as good or as funny as when he repeats the word.
Yeah, it doesn't have the same punch. It really doesn't. I mean, it's not always funny. I mean, Shakespeare.
No, right, Shakespeare? Right.
I mean, tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow creeps in this petty pace from day to day. I would have made a great Macbeth. But anyway, that there it is again, epizeuxis, but it's just, it's not as funny or whatever.
Fletcher, I'm sure it's at the tip of your tongue, but there's another term for it as well. You slightly possibly different, where it's separated by... Obviously, it's diakopy.
Of course. Naturally, diakopy, yeah.
And I'm going to give you a quick example. My favorite as a kid was the name's Bond. It's an awful accent. James Bond.
Right. I think we agreed that you were going to do Yoda when you did English accents from now on.
Bond.
Bond I am. James Bond.
There you are, Ross. Good, good.
Okay, I got to say something though now. Diakopy is a little different.
Yes.
Okay.
And I think we should make that point because it's the words are repeated, but they're separated by like a few little words. So it's like you're not saying the name's Bond.
You know? Yes.
Which is not quite as classy. It's the name's Bond, James Bond.
Mm-hmm.
Although we have an example here, which is like a mix of diakopy and, okay, it's Romeo, Romeo. Wherefore art thou, Romeo?
What are you sounding like that? What is the matter with
no
Juliet?
I know, whatever. But you have two Romeos and a separate, and then you have another Romeo.
Uh-huh. So you have epizeuxis and diakopy.
Yes.
That's actually also called extended diakopy, because you're saying the word is repeated three times.
Mm.
But, I mean... I don't quite understand. Yeah, Ross, the difference in the extended diakopy and epizeuxis.
No, I think that's that's
one of those fake.
I think they're really essentially the same.
The thing that fascinates me with epizeuxis is we were talking about the comedic thing, and then I threw in. I mean, we just had the Shakespeare's, but if you look at it, political speeches almost more than any other form of current rhetoric are huge in this. That repeat.
Mm-hmm. Is that
think about it?
Yeah, is that because? And I don't necessarily mean this pejoratively, although in some cases I do. Is that because a lot of political speeches are basically propaganda?
Well, you might say trying to convince people of the rightness of your cause.
Right.
But yeah.
Right.
I think you're right.
I mean, I don't necessarily mean propaganda like it's empty and you're trying to make them, you know, make people do bad things. I mean, you know,
convincing.
Yeah.
No, I think you're completely correct.
And it's a really effective device.
Mm-hmm. Shall we move on?
This is an example. I will not read it in the original Latin, but it's Cicero or Cicero, depending on how correct you want to be and how they used to say the words. But it is, I now forget your wrongs, Clodia. I set aside the memory of my pain. Okay, Kathy, let's do John Milton in a good British accent.
Uh-huh. Yes. I was never crazy on Milton. That's beside the point.
Sly is reading it right. My wife's reading it right now. And
she likes him?
Not really, no.
No, I didn't like him. I felt bad. I was supposed to like him.
I know.
Him, but
I should like him, yeah.
It was one of the... Never mind. We're digressing here. Okay, this is John Milton in a non-British accent. I shall ignore the fact that learning is youth's finest ornament, the strong support of the prime of life and the consolation of old age. I shall make no point over the fact that after careers full of achievement and glory, many of the men who have been most honored by their contemporaries and many of the most eminent of the Romans withdrew from the conflict and hurly-burly, that's a word we don't use enough, of ambition. No. To literary studies as to harbor and a delightful treat.
And therein lies my problem with Milton already.
Yeah.
I kind of lost
it. He's long and boring. I'm sorry.
I was going to ask if you had a shorter example, please.
Yeah. I'm going to go to, here's a shorter example. Robert Downey Jr. and Iron Man 2. We can deal with that one.
Finally, the real literary geniuses. Okay.
I'm not saying I'm responsible for this country's longest run of uninterrupted peace in 35 years. I'm not saying that from the ashes of captivity. I'm not saying Uncle Sam can kick back on a long chair, sipping an iced tea, because I haven't come across anyone man enough to go toe-to-toe with me on my best day. It's not about me.
That's actually a really good example, Ross. You found a good one. I don't like my Milton. Still.
So, at least in that last example, he was very clearly saying all of those things by denying that he was saying those things.
You got it.
You got it.
That is the rhetorical device called apophysis.
Apophysis.
A-P-O-P-H-A-S-I-S.
Apophysis.
Apophysis.
And so that's what it is. It's saying something by pretending you're doing the opposite. I mean, but by saying you're not saying it.
It's kind of like humble bragging when you think about it, you know, because you're like, oh, no.
Yeah.
Not
in the ancient Greek, you're turning away from what you're saying, in effect. Of course, there are other terms that I'm sure, Fletcher, again, we all have the tip of our tongues, like paralepsis.
Oh, right.
And preteritarian, but whatever, I didn't even know that one. The most famous example we could find was in Reagan in 1984, when he was running. People were wondering at the time, he was 73 at the time, they were saying he was too old to run. Mm-hmm. And he was saying, I will not make age an issue of this campaign.
Oh, yeah.
I am not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience.
Right.
That was clever speech writing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Which leads us to assonance.
Sorry.
What? That's the next term. Oh, I said it out loud without thinking.
Oh, gosh.
I know. Okay. That's what got me upset. Okay, Fletcher, let's reverse it then. What is assonance?
Assonance has something to do with the way it sounds, but I can't quite remember what it is. I don't know. Give me an example.
I do. My favorite book as a kid. I do not like green eggs and ham. I do not like them, Sam, I am.
Or we could just say chip and dip. That's one of my favorites. Chip and dip. Surf and turf.
Well, so those things rhyme. I mean, they sound similar, I guess. And so what? What's going on here besides the fact that they rhyme?
We're getting there. Let me just give one last one.
Yeah.
My favorite poem of all. Ah, distinctly I remember it was in the bleak December, and each separate dying ember wrought its ghost upon the floor. Eagerly I wished the morrow. Vainly I had sought to borrow from my books surcease of sorrow for the lost Lenore, for the rare and radiant maiden whom the angels named Lenore, nameless here forevermore.
I just love that. I must say,
I do too.
I still really like that poem.
Mm-hmm.
I do too. I think people should really learn. They should memorize poems again. I don't know if sure we do it anymore in school. I love that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, there's a clue in there when you just listen to it. There's a short E and a long O vowel sounds that are found throughout this stanza. And that's basically what assonance is.
Yeah, you're using the same vowel sound over and over, but with different consonants.
Oh.
So like chip and dip, it does rhyme, but you're getting that eh, che,
yeah,
and duh.
Surf and turf, you're getting the and
But no, the thing with assonance, though, is it's funny because you had said, Fletcher, you know the sound. And I think this is one of those terms when I hear it done, like trip and dip, but I think more of the rhyme than I do of the fact that it's the vowel sound. And I think, and that I think that sort of throws you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in that thing from, even in the part of the Raven, Ross, that you read, I'm mm-hmm. kind of focusing on remember, December, floor, morrow, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It kind of overrides it.
No, I agree with you, Kathy, on that.
But what we're really talking about are those vowel sounds.
Yes.
Repeated vowel sounds. Okay.
Okay, we're going to switch this. Now we're going to switch to a relative of assonance, which I think you're going to be able to guess. And how much wood would a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? Or how much ground could a groundhog grind if a groundhog could grind ground? Which I always thought as a kid, I thought that was an amazingly clever riff on the woodchuck
thing. That's great. Well, I don't know whether to focus on the initial consonant sound, the w and the gr, or whether to focus on the what's it called, the vowel sound in there, which isn't really a vowel. It's not a vowel. What is it, a diphthong? Ow, what's it called?
That's right, though, it is a diphthong.
So I'm
but
not,
you were right at the beginning.
Okay, so we're focusing more on the initial consonant sound that's repeated,
right?
Woodchuck, groundhog.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what it's called? Okay, we had assonance.
Assonance.
Now we're talking about consonants. Consonants.
Thank you.
Yes.
But Kathy, that doesn't really follow because it should have been valsonance.
Valsonance, yeah.
It is, Ross. It's just like they changed it to assonance because it sounded better, okay? Trust me, I know things. No, yes, but I'm saying, but in this case, it sounds like exactly what it is.
Okay, that's consonants.
This is interesting because a lot of tongue twisters are consonants, like Ross would done the ground, the woodchuck.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Peter Pepper, but that's also alliteration. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers.
Mm-hmm.
But it's the K's that throw you. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Yeah.
I'm going to try to say it. Peter Piper, I got it before the K, I lost it. Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers. Yeah, it is the K.
Well, okay, so what's the difference? What's the difference then between consonants and alliteration?
Alliteration is with the same letter or sound at the beginning of closely connected words.
Okay, yeah, and consonants, we've got the K's, which are not at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So picked a peck of pickled peppers, it's the sound like...
Oh, so it doesn't have to be at the beginning. Okay, it just happened to be in those other examples. I get it.
But consonants is a subset of alliteration.
Yeah.
Consonants is the repetition only of consonant sounds. Alliteration can be vowels and or consonant sounds.
Okay.
Right. But also, it's like with alliteration, because we've got the Peter Piper, the
Well, let's analyze Peter Piper picked. We have alliteration with the P's. Peter Piper
and then
picked
you got
the Peppa.
The consonants.
Consonants with the K sounds and the P's and the R's.
Right.
And we have assonance with the different pronunciations of E's and I's. So with Peter Piper picked a peck of pickled peppers, we've got alliteration, consonants overlapping with alliteration, assonance overlapping, and we have all three.
So that's actually a very sophisticated piece of writing.
It's extremely sophisticated.
All kidding aside, do we know where Peter Piper came from?
It was first published in John Harris's Peter Piper's Practical Principles of Plain and Perfect Pronunciation in 1813.
Huh.
Oh, that's so cool.
They're saying here, though, that it's a traditional nursery rhyme and it probably came earlier and that Harris picked it up. But his thing, which is interesting, too, he had a tongue twister for each letter of the alphabet.
That's so cool.
Wow.
And they're saying that there was a guy called Pierre Poivre.
botanist. Peter Pepper?
Yes. But I'm not sure, is this person real or not? Pierre, you know, I mean, it's like, is that a real person? I'm looking that up right now. No, it's a real person. An 18th Peter Piper, Pierre Poivre, was an 18th century horticulturist and botanist born in Lyon.
Oh my God, talk about, what do you call, a nominative determinism?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Wow, that's something.
He introduced spice plants to Mauritius and Réunion, including clove and nutmeg.
What, no pickled peppers?
I wonder. Well, this was fun, Fletcher and Kathy. And to paraphrase Groucho Marx, we've had a perfectly wonderful time, but this wasn't it.
Oh, speaking of genius.
You are kidding, are you not, Ross?
No, I am not. But I am sure Fletcher knows the technical term for what I just said. Do you think so, Kathy?
I think so.
I don't like it when you guys gang up on me.
We're siblings.
Yes. You have lots of experience. Yeah. I have no idea what this is called. Obviously, it was some kind of misdirection by old Groucho there.
I'm shocked you didn't know this. It's a Paraprestokian, of course.
Oh, that sounds familiar. That sounds really familiar. I wonder if we've brought that term up before, because I remember thinking that it sounded like a race of people in Gulliver's Travels.
I think we might have brought it up before.
I do recall that. It obviously didn't take with any of us, but anyway.
Paraprestokian.
It's when you change, it misleads you. You're expecting something to happen, uh-huh. And then boom, it plays with your expectations and turns it. Like we've had a perfectly wonderful time, boom, but this wasn't it.
It's anticlimactic, really. Mm-hmm. It's an anticlimax. And, you know, like Homer Simpson, if I could just say a few words, I'd be a better public speaker. It's that sort of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that's a really effective device, I think, especially in comedy.
Mm-hmm. The term comes from the Greek, and it basically means against expectations. So you're not getting what you expected.
But it's also used politically, too. I mean, British, like Winston Churchill said it about, I think it was a really brilliant statement. You can always count on the Americans to do the right thing after they have tried everything else. Mm. I mean, it succinctly gives you a feeling of what the person thinks, and it's memorable.
Mm-hmm. I like it. And it's one of those things that I want to try to use more often. Honestly, I wasn't even saying it's a joke, because I just think it's wonderful. I mean, you look at it, because it's very pithy. It's just really a good boom surprise, but you have to be clever and you have to be thinking on your feet. And I don't know, not usually that.
Yes, I struggle with that too.
Yeah, no, it's one of those things. I'll remember, I'll have a great one like 2 years later, 2 days later, but it's like,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Exactly.
And then I'll try to sneak it in inappropriately and people look at me like, what?
Right. That's the worst. And you hear yourself do it and you think, this isn't really right now.
I know. But it would have been good when I should have done it before.
Yeah. Yeah. And you feel like explaining now, yesterday, what you said.
What's that called? Is that L'esprit d'escalier, the spirit of the stairs,
yes,
or the
yes, ghost spirit of the stairs, yeah. Which is one of the most perfect terms in the world.
Yeah,
because it's just you. We've all had it. We all have it. I have it often, and you just sit there and you just think, crap.
I know.
Close.
If only I would have said that 5 minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
Robin Williams seemed to not have it. He was brilliant at that.
Oh, yeah.
I heard him one time on a talk show, and he just kept coming back, and I can't believe they were scripted.
Yeah.
It was just bang.
Oh, no.
Jonathan Winter's the same way. Yeah. Same thing. Mm-hmm. Just bang.
Yeah, it's that kind of brain.
Some people have it. Some people have it. Not me.
We don't, do we? Yeah, yeah, right. And then there's us.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armia, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Hi, it's Terry Gross, the host of Fresh Air. We bring you in-depth, long-form interviews with actors, directors, musicians, authors, journalists, and more. Listen to our Peabody Award-winning Fresh Air podcast from WHYY and NPR.